Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Monday, October 27th, 2014, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, a new poll shows that more Americans view the Afghan war as a mistake. Then, the nurse quarantined for Ebola concerns is a CDC employee, and the CIA denies it's intentionally withholding torture evidence. That's next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
They rape the Muslim men while they're on drugs with high-dollar prostitutes flown in devil outfits.
Well, what does a nation without borders do with doctors without borders? That's what we've been considering over this last weekend. First, we learned on Friday that a doctor who had been treating people in West Africa returned, a doctor from the organization Doctors Without Borders. And while he was symptomatic, he traveled on the subway several times, on a taxi, went to a public area, went bowling. The public was outraged. We had mandatory quarantines enacted by some northeastern governors, and we saw another person from the same organization, Doctors Without Borders, a nurse, who was subjected to that quarantine when she tested positive. Now, that test turned out to be a false positive. Subsequent tests showed that she did not have Ebola. Nevertheless, she was outraged that she was quarantined, and she wrote an article about it in the Dallas News. Now, here's the interesting thing I think about this is they haven't focused on the fact that she worked for the CDC. Now, she says that she's scared. She says that many people might be subject to the same types of things that she was. And she said she's worried that they'll arrive and see a frenzy of disorganization, of fear, and most frighteningly, quarantine. Now, it is that disorganization that concerns all of us. And so if we're going to err, shouldn't we err on the side of caution? That's all we heard on Friday in the congressional testimony, that out of an abundance of caution, they were going to do such and such. They really didn't need to, but just to be cautious, they were going to do that. If you get confusing, contradictory readings on whether or not someone has a fever, shouldn't you, out of an abundance of caution, shouldn't you put that person into quarantine? That's what they did, but there's a lot of criticism about that. And she said this in her essay. She said, I recalled my last night in the Ebola management team in Sierra Leone. I was called in at midnight because a 10-year-old girl was having seizures. I coaxed crushed tablets of Tylenol as an anti-seizure medicine into her mouth as her body jolted in bed. It was the hardest night of my life. I watched a young girl die in a tent away from her family. Now, hold that thought for a moment. None of us wants to see that happen to any child. We don't want to see it happen to our children in this country. That's why we have quarantines. That's why a doctor, a nurse, should understand that. They should respect that. We see a doctor coming back with that organization, not respecting quarantine, going out in public, just as we saw the doctor who said, get your damn vaccines, go out in public, even as she was quarantined because she traveled to the country with a camera crew, one of whom got Ebola. They're not immune from getting the disease, neither are the rest of us. The first rule of medical care should be to do no harm. The virus doesn't care if you're a hero. It doesn't care if you're a doctor. It doesn't care if you're an American or an African. We have to exercise that caution. And certainly, I'm concerned, as anyone else would be, certainly I'm concerned about the abuse that could be done with these quarantines. We've talked about that from the very beginning. We're very concerned that if this is allowed to get out of control, and we believe that may be what the CDC is up to, they are so incredibly and repetitively lax about their procedures, we're very concerned that they want this to get out in America so they can enact a medical martial law. But understand this. If you've got a SWAT team that kicks in the door of an innocent person's home, starts shooting people, throwing grenades in a baby's crib, that's not the kind of America we want to live in. But there is a role if a SWAT team is trying to rescue somebody that is in a hostage situation or in a bank robbery. We have to be able to distinguish between the legitimate use of a SWAT team and the illegitimate use of a SWAT team. In the same way, we have to be able to distinguish between the legitimate and illegitimate use of quarantine. And of course, we see this again from other doctors chiming in. We have the one of the doctors who was also abroad treating people who did get Ebola say that he's worried that it's going to create a police state. He says, we should view doctors the same way we view firefighters and police officers, people who are putting themselves in harm's way to make a difference. I agree with that. Let's not make the quarantine any more difficult than it has to be. Perhaps we could treat them at least as well as we do the illegal immigrants who are coming across our open borders, put them up in very nice hotels as they were doing with the younger children who were coming across. Nevertheless, we don't see necessarily our returning soldiers being treated that way. There have been reports of entire crews who were set apart, had their weapons taken from them, who were harassed by the TSA. Our own Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs went through horrible treatment at the hands of the TSA. They discovered gunpowder on him because he'd been blown up by a roadside bomb. And so they stuck their hands in his wounds. We don't see that kind of respect being afforded to people who have returned fighting for our government. But we need to be able to distinguish between the difference between someone who is at risk and putting the nation at risk and someone who is not putting the nation at risk. And just to underscore this, the Doctors Without Borders, the MSF as they call themselves, because it's a French organization, that's their initials, they pointed out that they've had staff members who have contracted Ebola, 13 of whom have died. So that's 54% of them in terms of a fatality rate. It's something we should be very concerned about. And as we look at the idea that people are going to be objective about their self-quarantine, I don't think we can trust it to that. I don't think we can trust a doctor like the one who was found to have Ebola and then went into the public. He was not being objective about his self-quarantine. And I don't think this nurse is being objective about it either. And when we look at what happened with Mr. Duncan, we learned this weekend on 60 Minutes that he, in fact, lied the first time he went to the emergency room in Dallas. We had a report on 60 Minutes with one of the nurses who had interviewed him. Here's what she had to say.
And I asked, have you been in contact with anyone who's been sick?
He said...
No. He said no.
And to underscore that, if Mr. Duncan had survived, he was going to be prosecuted by both Liberian law enforcement and by Dallas law enforcement for reckless endangerment of others. The same thing they do to people who willingly and knowingly spread HIV. Now, the Wall Street Journal, I think, hit the pushback against reasonable measures taken against people who are returning from the country as the anti-hysteria. In other words, we have only fear to fear, but they take it to an entirely new level. This is what Holman Jenkins said in the Wall Street Journal. He said, the media's own anti-hysteria has come to surface. This week, a Bloomberg radio host rudely and repeatedly and uncharacteristically, he said, hushed a Wall Street analyst for suggesting that we still have things to learn about how the virus is transmitted. Guess what? That's true, he said. What's more, the virus is subject to forces of natural selection, so even our broadly reliable generalizations about transmissibility are hardly written in stone. And I would underscore the fact that at the very beginning of this, we were told that this is a different strain than they had seen before. That narrative has largely been ignored, been lost in the mainstream media. It's a strain we haven't seen before. It's a strain that is now more than four times the total number of people have been infected with Ebola as all of the 32 previous outbreaks combined. He goes on to say, the media, as if citing some kind of iron law, kept telling us that, to use the New York Times formulation, people infected with Ebola cannot spread the disease until they begin to display symptoms, and it cannot be spread through the air. And he says, sorry, but each clause of that sentence is subject to caveat. And the whole thought needs to be preceded with the words, government scientists believe. And who is one of those main government scientists? Well, that would be John Holdren, the guy who has pushed population control, working for Obama now. And he says, as a scientist, so we should bow before that authority. That's the argument, arguing from authority. He's a scientist, so we should just shut up and listen to him, regardless of what other scientists are saying. He says, as a scientist, he says, a travel ban is a bad idea because people might sneak around it. And he points out, but large numbers of people are sneaking around our borders anyway. They're totally open. And that's the issue. It's the open borders. That's why they want to put down the hysteria, the concern, the legitimate concern about spreading something that is so, so difficult to control. They want to put down that hysteria because it points out how utterly failed their open border policies are. If you're concerned about your family because our government can't even muster the courage to check to see if people coming into our country are not bringing an infection in, a virulent infection like that, if they're not allowed to look at the criminal background of people who are coming into this country. Our families are at danger from that. I believe that's one of the reasons why the Obama administration, the Democrat Party in general, is seeing a loss of support among women, because they understand that this has real consequences for us and for our families. Now, this week also marked the 13th anniversary of the Afghanistan war, and it looks like they're going to end it. That's what they're telling us, at least. We see that the BBC poll finds that 68% of Brits say that the Afghanistan war was futile. Now, listen to this. It's even worse than that. Not only do 68% of the Britons think that UK's military campaign was not worthwhile, a further 42% thought that Britain was, quote, less safe as a result of the war. Exactly. That's the point. It did not make us safer in any way, shape, or form. We see the same thing from Americans. If you look at this poll, and this is going back to February earlier this year, look at that trend, how from 2002 to 2014, look at how approval rate has dropped down into a funnel to where it was at that point in time negative. Now, what have they done? Certainly, you know, there has been a mission accomplished. As we pointed out last week, the Afghan poppy production is at a record high. It was only 10% of the world's supply under the Taliban. Now we're at 90% of the world's supply under the U.S. military's oversight. So now we have a heroin epidemic. I guess that's really the mission accomplished. You know, it was back in the days of Freeway Ricky Ross when we had a crack cocaine epidemic, and that was intimately tied with our foreign policy, with our wars in Central America, just as this is intimately tied in with the war in Afghanistan. Now, some interesting developments, though, as we're leaving, we're going to help them to find their way, evidently. We're going to help them find a new interest in sports. The Washington Post reports that the U.S. government is going to pay to upgrade TV sports coverage in Afghanistan, including coverage for goat hauling matches. Now, is this a boondoggle? Is this some kind of corruption? No. This is the way they're going to exercise control, the same way they exercise control on the American people. It's one of their key means of support, getting you distracted from what's going on that really matters, and then feeding you disinformation. It's exactly the same thing they do here. Listen to what they're going to do. Many U.S. taxpayers probably know they're subsidizing Afghanistan's government operations and development efforts, but it may surprise them to learn that they're paying for the war-torn nation to enter the modern era of televised sports coverage. The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan issued a letter to the Secretary of State, John Kerry, this month, and he questioned spending $3.6 million to supply three television production trucks for Afghanistan television networks. And, of course, one of the key things that they're going to be covering there is not football, but they say it's a fierce game in which teams of horse-mounted players, something kind of like polo, except that they're knocking around goat parts. It doesn't really matter what the sport is, does it? It's really the control. It's the distraction. And then, as I said, the disinformation, the same propaganda techniques that we see being used here successfully on Americans to distract them from the reality of what their government is doing to them, that's going to be used as a control technique over there. In the same way that we've seen the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe used to propagandize people in Europe, they're now going to use that technique on us. Full spectrum dominance. Now, stay with us right after the break. We're going to talk about some election news. And, of course, we're going to have special election coverage next week. We'll tell you all about that and when we come back. Stay with us.
I want to know what's really happening with Ebola. I want to know if there are things out there that could protect this country and protect my three children, just as you do. Government can't and won't protect you from Ebola. It is up to all of us to be prepared and to protect ourselves. I'm not sitting back waiting for the government to come protect me and take care of me. It's why I'm doing everything I can to boost my body's natural defenses. That's why I've got storable foods. That's why I've got my colloidal silver from InfoWarsLife.com, the silver bullet. That's why I've got Nascent Iodine X2 that has absolutely supercharged my personal body's defenses. I personally have gotten prepared, and I recommend everybody else get prepared as well. So visit InfoWarsLife.com today to find the most cutting-edge, hardcore supplements on the planet. Or call the InfoWars staff, and we can answer your questions or take your order over the phone at 888-253-3139.
Introducing the first proprietary oxygen-based intestinal cleanser, OxyPowder. Backed by FDA-approved phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials. All the toxins from the air, the food, the water, ultimately ends up in the gut or affects the gut. Take your health into your own hands and start cleansing your body today with OxyPowder. Secure your OxyPowder today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
Now, as you may know, we're about 1 week away from the midterm elections, Obama's midterm. We're going to have live coverage next Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. That's pre-election night coverage. We're also going to have live coverage the night of the election next Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. Central Time. That's going to be coverage, results, and analysis. Now, we're not going to just cover the horse race aspect of this or whether or not the Republicans are going to take over the Senate. There are some real issues involved in this that are going to transcend which party is in power, and it's not a real clear issue as to where the liberty issue is on the Republicans and Democrats. We're going to lose on some issues. We may gain on some issues. A good example of this is the back and forth that's going on right now in the Senate over the CIA torture memos. Now, of course, Dianne Feinstein is no friend of liberty. But she has been fighting the CIA primarily because she's angry that they spied on her, spied on her staff. So now there's this back and forth, this blame game as to why they haven't released this torture report. Going on about 1 year, they've been working on this. Now, The Intercept reports that a frustrated CIA is blaming the torture report delays on senators who want it to be intelligible. In other words, we would just give you the report filled with black bars, redacting everything on there. But, you know, those senators actually want to have people see what actually went on. That's the fight that's going on. This is what the CIA said. This is the way they spun it. The suggestion that the CIA is delaying or obstructing the negotiations over redactions is patently false. The CIA has been doing all it can to bring the process to a conclusion as expeditiously as possible in order that we can fully focus on the many threats that are facing our nation. It is the committee's objections to the redactions that have delayed the process, okay? But it's those redactions which have basically taken all the content out that they're fighting. And then they said the CIA, on behalf of the administration, provided us, this is the Senate giving their side of it, they said they provided us on August 1st with a version of the committee's executive summary that was redacted to the point that Senator Feinstein determined it was unreleasable in its current form. And in the ensuing weeks and months, we've debated the issue and sought further unredactions. Unredactions. There we go. That's where we live. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get the black bars taken off so we can see what's actually going on. Now, if the Senate takes control, if the Republicans take control of the Senate, rather, Dianne Feinstein will no longer be in charge of that committee. Who's going to replace her? Well, she'll be replaced by the senator from North Carolina, Senator Burr. He has no problem with the CIA. He has no problem with the snooping of the CIA, and presumably he has no problem with the torture that the CIA performed under the Republican administration. He would like to see that just put out there. They say, this is a report from Huffington Post, they say the Republican, who may chair the Senate Intelligence Committee if his party wins control of the chamber in next month's election, isn't too worried about CIA snooping on Congress or about the agency's combative director. And they say, although relations between the CIA director, John Brennan, and Dianne Feinstein, chair right now of the Senate Intelligence Committee, have been chilly, he says, Dianne, this is Mr. Burr speaking, Dianne may have some problems with it, but I think we've gotten a full account of what's happened. Listen, I think there have been some mistakes, but I don't think it's the first director that's made mistakes. There you go. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. Yeah, mistakes have been made. It's not really a problem that the CIA punitively spies on Senate members who are investigating them. This is why we had the church hearings back in the 1970s. Of course, it didn't resolve anything. Now, on the other hand, if the Republicans take over the majority of the Senate, there is some hope that something might be done about Obamacare. Maybe. We haven't seen the Republican majority in the House do anything about that. They have the purse strings. They could cut off the funding of Obamacare in the sense the 16,000 agents that are going to be hammering people who don't comply. They could make those kind of alterations. They could make alterations to the law itself. But of course, they won't. Not even, I believe, if they have the Senate there. Nevertheless, this is going to be a referendum on Obama. Now, we saw back in August, the Huffington Post was talking about how finally they had a senator who was going to be in a tough reelection fight betting on Obamacare. This was back August 20th of this year. And they say in the this was the race that's going on in Arkansas. They said many of the senators who have supported Obamacare have been reluctant to go all in on the decision that they made, especially among those who voted for the law and have since found themselves in a tough race. Today, however, we have a change. Senator Mark Pryor, Democrat of Arkansas, currently in a tough reelection race against his Republican opponent, Tom Cotton, is up with a new ad in which he heralds his yes vote on the Affordable Health Care Act. That's the euphemism for Obamacare. Now, we go 2 months later, and this is what we see. Who says Obamacare isn't a major factor in the midterms? This is from the Washington Examiner. And they say some Democrats and their advocates in the press believe that Obamacare, a year into its implementation, is no longer a factor in midterm elections. But no one has told that to Republican candidates or to Republican voters. And so they mention this very race where the Republican has now pulled ahead of the Democrat. Looks like he is going to defeat him in that close race. And they mentioned two more. They mentioned the race in Louisiana, where Democrat Senator Mary Landrieu is being challenged by an incumbent. The Republican challenger is running an ad that features Landrieu voters who say that her support of the health care law turned them away from Democrats. One of them says, "Senator Landrieu, I voted for you before, but when you voted for Obamacare, I knew I had made a mistake." Yeah, we made a mistake when we went with Obama and Obamacare. Can we do something to undo that mistake? Will it be undone if Republicans take control of the Senate, or will they just go along with this government takeover of health care? It was Mitt Romney who came up with essentially the same plan that Obama eventually implemented. So we're not really sure that we're going to have a choice there. Nevertheless, this election is going to revolve around issues, and it's not going to be a straight up or down on the liberty issues. We're going to analyze that for you in the election coverage of next week. Now, coming up next, we have a candidate who is not going to have us make a choice as to whether or not we want to have freedom in one area and lose that freedom in another area. It's the Libertarian candidate for governor in Florida. He's currently polling very strong in the polls there, but of course, he's been kept out of the debates. We're going to talk to him about that and about his issues. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
DNA Force.
When cells become toxic, they die early and aging sets in.
DNA Force.
No one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. Just one of the key compounds, BioPQQ, is backed by major clinical studies.
DNA Force.
We now have the synergistic solution. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll free 888-253-3139.
DNA Force.
The globalist social engineers are not just targeting us with propaganda. They are manipulating our genetics. We are being targeted at every level by estrogen mimickers that lower our testosterone and other hormones and natural compounds that the body needs. After consulting top doctors, nutritionists, pharmacists, and others, we have developed what I believe is the ultimate non-GMO organic super male vitality formula sourced from powerful organic herbs and then concentrated for maximum potency. Super Male Vitality was developed to activate your body's own natural processes instead of using synthetic chemicals. Super Male Vitality by InfoWars Life is so powerful that I only take half the recommended dose. For a limited time, we are offering 15% off Super Male Vitality at InfoWarsLife.com to introduce you to this powerful supplement. Visit InfoWarsLife.com today to secure your Super Male Vitality. InfoWarsLife.com.
Well, voting in America, American politics, is kind of like going shopping in a Soviet department store. If there's a choice, there's only one. You won't find that too often. Joining us today is a Libertarian candidate for governor in Florida, Adrian Wiley. Now, he's a small business owner, a veteran, radio personality, a community activist in committees and boards, and most importantly, a community activist in civil liberties. Joining us today is Adrian Wiley. The governor's race in Florida illustrates a couple of very important points. One of them is that we don't really have meaningful choices between the Republicans and the Democrats. The other one is the lengths that they will go to keep us from having an access to somebody else, to a Patriot Party candidate, for example. And of course, the Libertarian Party candidate represents that liberty, that patriotism that we want to see, that standing for the Constitution. And he's been shut out of the debates there, even though he's polling very high for a third party candidate. Mr. Wiley, you've been polling between 6 and 13%. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. And it's amazing. The links, like you said, that the two party establishment and the mainstream media will go to ensure that all viable voices aren't heard.
Yeah, we've seen that with Ron Paul in the presidential debates the first time he ran. We saw it extensively with Gary Johnson when he ran in 2012, even though he was a two-term governor reelected in a heavily Democrat state running as Republican. You'd think they'd want to have him on the ticket, but they shut him out and they put somebody like Herman Cain, who had never been elected to anything, merely appointed to the Federal Reserve. They put him in pretty much every single debate.
Well, I think that's what happens. It all has to do with the third party label. There's a vested interest by the power brokers to ensure that the two party duopoly is maintained. And that's exactly what we were seeing down here in Florida during my exclusion from the debates. You have to keep in mind that between my two opponents, there was probably at this point over $100 million being spent in media advertising.
Yeah.
By these two candidates. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that it's the media that actually hosts these debates, well, they're going to listen to their biggest clients when it comes to who they do and who they do not want included. Now, a couple of debate organizers buck the trend. Like, for example, I was invited to a debate at the University of Florida. And as soon as I was invited, the others dropped out. So that's the kind of thing that we see.
That's right. And you know, it's not just a third party, because we saw that done internally, as I mentioned, against bona fide Republican candidates. They vet this process. They really don't want somebody in there who's going to shake the paradigm. They've got a lock on both parties. I think Florida illustrates that perhaps better than anywhere else, where we see Charlie Crist, who has ran and was elected as Republican, then jumping into Obama's embrace, then running against Scott this time. There's really not that much difference between them, is there?
There's virtually no difference. If you look at their records as governor are both identical. And quite frankly, they're both as flawed. They're both deeply flawed candidate. They have horrible, horrible ethical and quite frankly, criminal violations in their past. Yet again, the media seems to think that there's nothing wrong with that.
You know, something else that was in their past was when Charlie Crist was running for governor back in 2006, the Reform Party candidate actually got a judge to allow him in the debate. And this is the way it was reported by the mainstream media. Talk about how they're in bed with the major parties. They said the result was a rancorous mess as Lynn, the candidate was Max Lynn of the Reform Party, shouted at Crist and took one-third of the one-hour debate away from the two candidates, as if it was their debate and not the people's debate.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up. That was Max Lynn in 2006, and we actually recruited the same attorney that represented him to get him in the debates. But back in 2006, the criteria was set at 7% in the polls to be included in the debates. Today, we're facing just, 8 years later, we're facing a percentage of 15%. That's the criteria they're requiring now for me to be included in the debates. And we just missed it. Actually, we've since crossed that threshold, but it wasn't within the arbitrary deadline that they set. They do have an absolute strong arm technique to ensure that, third alternative voices are not heard in these debates.
They keep moving the goalposts. It's like the referees are playing on that team. So, you know, it's not 5%, then it goes to 10%. When you get to 10%, they move it to 15%. Where are they going to stop? Are you going to need to have 51% in order to get in if you're not a Republican or a Democrat? Now, one of the things that they said, and I want to move on to the issues, one of the things they said back in that 2006 debate was that still they didn't have any new territory covered on the top issues of taxes, especially property taxes. You've got an interesting proposal on property taxes. Tell us about that.
That's right. I'm proposing a 100% homestead property tax exemption. And what that says is that no Floridian pays any property tax whatsoever on their primary residence. We have a candidate now, our current governor, Rick Scott, who likes to call himself a fiscal conservative, yet he is, not proposing any real tax cuts. And the best tax cut that he's come up with so far is a $25 off coupon when you renew your auto tag.
There you go.
So they don't want to hear substantive tax cuts. They don't want to hear real spending cuts. They just want to work within their very narrow margin that separates Republicans from Democrats.
Now, that's a big issue in Florida because they don't have a state income tax. So they rely pretty heavily on sales tax, on property taxes. So what would you do with that lost revenue that they're currently getting on property taxes with that exemption?
Well, property tax in Florida funds the counties and municipalities. We also have a 6% state sales tax. The state collects 6% at every dollar. My plan is to cut the state budget by 30%, and then when we do, we can actually reallocate approximately 2 cents out of that sales tax revenue to the county. So it's revenue neutral for the counties. There's still plenty of money for the local services, police, fire, schools, roads. But yet everybody in Florida has on average an extra $200 in their pocket every month. So that's real economic stimulus, the free market way.
That's great. So that's some pocketbook issues. Now, you're, of course, running as a libertarian. You've been an activist on some civil liberties issues, notably the TSA back in 2011, Real ID. Give us your take on some of the civil liberties issues that confront Floridians that you would stand up for.
Well, they're the same issues that are confronting people all across the U.S., having to do with the decimation of our Bill of Rights, the First, Second, Fourth, Fifth Amendments across the board. And I've long been a proponent of this. One of the things that I intend to do is to ensure that any usurpation of power by the federal government is nullified here in Florida under the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. And we're going to do that on both a civil liberties basis and an economic basis. I actually have a plan called the Florida Interstate Commerce Act, which will say that any business that operates exclusively within Florida's borders shall be immune from any federal regulation whatsoever. And we have the authority to do that under the Constitution. The Commerce Clause only applies to commerce between the states, not within. So we're gonna take full advantage of that.
Well, that'd be excellent. Now, you were very active, not just in speaking out against TSA abuses, but at the same time here in Texas that we had the House unanimously approve a measure to stop the criminal and sexual molestation of people, especially children. That was passed in our House, and then they came out and got the Senate to pull back on it, threatening essentially to turn Texas into a no-fly zone. That's the way they stopped us here. You were active at the very same time in 2011 there in Florida.
That's right. I called out as the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Florida. I called out to all of 67 Florida sheriffs to begin making arrests on TSA agents who were either engaging in sexual molestation of passengers or violating the Fourth Amendment rights of passengers, illegal searches and seizures without warrant, without probable cause. And, of course, though I got some secret support from a couple of those sheriffs, no one would go out on record against the TSA. And it's a real shame because our constitutional sheriffs and all of our elected officials that swear to uphold the Constitution are falling down on the job, and they're failing to uphold their oath.
That's where I think we can have a lot of effect. People believe they can only affect change by sending someone to Washington. I think the real change is going to come if we elect strong, patriotic leaders like you who will stand against federal tyranny, stand for the Bill of Rights. I think that's where we need to check them. There's a lot of power that is not being used at the state level, at the local level, as you just mentioned, with the sheriffs. And I'll just add this to Mr. Wiley, that at the time that was happening, we learned in a lawsuit by John Corbett, who's an anti-TSA activist, he discovered as part of his recovery that the TSA actually in their internal documents in 2011, as they were threatening to turn Texas into a no-fly zone, as you were fighting them in Texas, they said there was no terrorist threat against airports or airplanes. That accidentally got published on the federal website in an unredacted version. Then they put the redacted version up. So it's kind of interesting to see what they didn't want us to see in that. Well, thank you so much. Yes, go ahead.
It's not surprising that that happens because, you know, a lot of this is geared towards conditioning the people to accept a slow form of tyranny. And that's something that here in Florida, we're fighting against.
Any final comments that you would like to tell the voters? We're 1 week away from the election.
Well, if you want someone who's honest in the governor's mansion, if you want to get government out of your wallet, out of your bedroom, out of your body and out of your business, I'm your guy.
Thank you very much. Adrian Wiley, Libertarian candidate for governor in Florida, polling very strong now. What's your latest polling?
We actually have internal polling data that puts me very close to 20% at this point. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens next Tuesday.
While I hope people will vote for real change instead of the lesser of two evils, there's a very little difference, especially in Florida. It really underscores how similar the choices that they offer us each time are, especially in Florida. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, David. Take care.
Thank you. And again, I would underscore that our election coverage beginning next Monday with pre-election coverage and the live election coverage that we're going to have election night on Tuesday, November 4th, it's going to be a little bit different, of course, than what you're going to see in mainstream media. We're going to look at the issues. We're going to look at whether or not these issues are going to be affected for the better or for the worse, depending on which party is in power. And we're going to look at ballot issues state by state. So it's not just going to be a Republican versus Democrat horse race type of coverage. Now, that live election coverage on Monday and Tuesday is going to be on Prison Planet TV. If you're not a subscriber, please consider joining, supporting our operation with your funds. You can also share that with up to 11 people watching simultaneously, as well as having access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. Again, that's going to be pre-election coverage 7 to 10, that's Central Time next Monday, and 6 to 10 p.m. on election night Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
From the water table to our soils to the atmosphere itself, our world is becoming more and more toxic each and every day. But it's not just the air outside that's toxic. Indoor air has been shown to have 2 to 5 times higher concentrations of pollutants than even outdoor air. And most Americans spend 90% of their time inside using toxic chemicals within their homes. There are more than 42 million smokers in the United States. Well over 1,000 types of mold and mildew linked to numerous conditions. And don't forget the fact that 6 million Americans live with pets they're allergic to as well. When I began to research these statistics, it was clear to me it was time to start cleansing my lungs in order to combat the toxic environment that we cannot escape, but that we can fight back against. Made with organic and wild cultivated herbs and manufactured in the USA, the new InfoWars Life Lung Cleanse is here in a convenient spray bottle that can be brought with you throughout any toxic environment. Now available exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcode with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.